The time is almost up. Thanks for listening to Big Band Broadway and Beyond. God bless, and if anybody asks, tell them Joe sent you.
Must we let it end?
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Today is June the 22nd, 2012. Hope all of you are having a great day out there in Dearborn. I just survived my neighborhood's garage sale, and that's always exciting. I just needed to plan ahead a little more on how long it takes to get out of the neighborhood in your car. People were blocking my drive, loading up on stuff. Of course, I'm all in favor of garage sales. Don't get me wrong. You know, that whole ecology thing about recycling, you know, the phrase starts with the three R's, reading, writing, and arithmetic. No, it starts with reduce, and then, of course, reuse, and then recycle on top of it. So that's pretty much a garage sale. You're reducing the amount of stuff you have in the house, and you're certainly allowing other people to reuse it. And recycling means sort of like changing form, so maybe they'll take that, piece of wood or cabinet or something and turn it into a boat or I whatever, you know, it's that's all possible. And it's all good. And that's, of course, I live in Dearborn, and there's always a lot of garage sales going on here. And it's whole neighborhoods, not just one person. The whole neighborhood does it. And I hope everybody's having fun with their typical summer activities. One of the summer activities you don't want to forget is Henry Ford Community College One-Act Play Festival. And this weekend is the second weekend of our theater department's one-act plays. This weekend, it's different than last weekend. So if you came last weekend, I know you enjoyed the four comedies. But this weekend, it's very special. I can't say it's better because it's different and very unique, called Movement Macbeth. Obviously, the play Macbeth by William Shakespeare. So with a special guest in the studio with us is the director of the play, Jerry Jablinski, who is also who adapted Macbeth, which is a big-time Shakespearean play. He adapted it for Movement. I like to think the term is pantomime. But welcome to the Journal, Jerry. Always glad to have you back and find out more about what our theater department's doing and yourself included, for that matter. Why do Shakespeare? Here's the big question. Okay, he's just getting really pensive here.
Oh, okay.
Why adapt Shakespeare, which as an English teacher for 14 years here at the college, you know, the poetry of the language was something that we just English teachers reveled in. So what's special about taking the words out?
Well, because not only are the words beautiful, Shakespeare was a wonderful poet and playwright, but the stories are as well. Macbeth is partially based on Ralph Holinshed's The Chronicles of England, which was a historical document, a history book, basically, of the ancient history of Great Britain. Mm-hmm. And so that was the basis for the story. And then, of course, there are the moral implications of the story, envy, greed, and betrayal.
A lot of people don't know there was a popular book out in the 60s, and I think somebody updated it, called Body Language, how mm-hmm. important it is, both facial expressions and just the posture and what you're doing with your hands and the angle you're sitting and whether or not you're crossing your legs if you're seated. All these things actually have very, very powerful symbolic movement. And, of course, you know this. You've actually studied, I guess the art is pantomime.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes, I studied with Marcel Marceau as part of my graduate study when Marceau was teaching at the University of Michigan School of Dance. And I've also studied movement with some other practitioners as well. It's nonverbal communication in terms of expression of emotion and intention and character through the body. But there is also abstract movement, which also communicates. And so we have a combination of both of those styles in this particular production.
What would be one example of abstract movement?
Well, abstract movement you would probably most easily identify with dance. Not necessarily the kind of competitive dance that you see on Dancing with the Stars. That's more about spectacle,
sure,
excitement, you know, flashing lights and exciting moves, but the kind of dance that tells a story, classical ballet, modern ballet, some modern jazz, oriental forms of theater which rely heavily on dance like kabuki and no theater, even Chinese opera, Balinese theater. We're using the American, or I shouldn't say American, I should say the European, the Western forms of abstract movement, which are more akin to ballet and jazz dance.
Well, this is really exciting. Most people probably are not that familiar with pantomime in general. Maybe some people think of street performance artists, and I know you've done that. You're a professional at these things, and you've been even paid for it, which is probably not as much as you're worth, Jerry, but you are a real knowledgeable professional. You've studied this, and what a great challenge. Why did you decide to do a major piece? This is quite unique, too. Normally, pantomime, we think of maybe very short piece, like a pantomimist is presenting, Marcel Marceau is famous for trying to stand his position in a windstorm, how the wind is blowing so hard and he's trying to keep his position there, and or maybe feeling a pane of glass with their hands in front of them. Those are all basically just short moments of time.
Sketches,
right. Mm-hmm. And it's very unique what we're doing here. I mean, very, very special. Have you seen, I'm sure you've seen other like extended one-act plays? This is only like a 45-minute production.
Well, actually, since we wrote the PSA, it's an hour and 15 minutes now without
all right,
intermission.
Good. Okay.
But Marceau himself was a member of a movement theater or pantomime company when he was younger, and they performed full-length pieces. Some of those pieces were performed without props and without music. Some of those pieces had been accompanied by music, props, and costumes. Mm-hmm. We use lights, costumes, props, scenery, and an original score by one of our faculty members, Anthony Lai. Mm-hmm. He is a classical composer as well as a modern composer, and the music is semi-classical.
Well, that's a great challenge. I know. I see Anthony a lot. He's helped benefits for WHFR with the rock band that he put together. And he's also frequently at the Dearborn Farmers and Artisans Market, helping to give a little background music. And I always try to put a little money in his cup out there because he is just brilliant, folks. He also, I think sometimes, I think he was teaching at least one of the electronic music classes in the music department for a while.
Right? Yes, he is also a sound engineer, so he teaches the digital editing. Right. So he was actually able to not only compose, but also engineer and mix his own music.
Wow. This is really special, folks. Also, again, I mentioned pantomime, and this is a full version and an hour and 15 minutes of Shakespeare's Macbeth. And the good news is here, folks, unlike myself as an English teacher trying to teach Macbeth in a class, the language, you don't have to look up the words here, folks, because we're not dealing with text, okay? That the movement itself is going to convey the story, even if you're not familiar with it, Jerry. Could I be correct in that, even if they've never read Shakespeare's Macbeth?
Yes. I mean, obviously.
That's the idea, yeah.
Yeah, obviously it's easier if you know the story. However, in the program, we have a summary of the plot.
Okay.
And most people know, of course, that it's the story of Macbeth, who meets witches on a heath after a battle, and then conspires with his wife, Lady Macbeth, to kill his friend, the king, his good compatriot, Banquo, the wife of another compatriot, Lady Macduff, and several others, in order to gain the kingship. Mm-hmm. And then Lady Macbeth goes gradually.
Spoiler alert, folks.
Okay, sorry.
Oh, no. Yeah, there's consequences with greed and selfishness, and that's what the play is about, too.
Exactly.
Better be careful there, those deals with the witches or the devil, in fact. Well, the devil's not in this play, but certainly there's consequences to greed and power, and it's a very powerful play for that. And I think, I was going to mention that besides the music, there's also from what two of the play directors from last week in the comedies that were presented here, they said there's also utterances, too, that there's nonverbal sounds.
Well, yes.
Like exclamations, like ooh or ah or or.
Well, yes, nonverbal sounds.
That's okay.
But absolutely not one single word.
No, right. No,
right.
No.
So the story is told completely through the movement by the actors.
Well, this is just a tremendous experience, folks. It's going to be here at the Adrey Auditorium. That's on the Henry Ford Community College main campus, Evergreen Road, just south of Ford Road. And the play, this play, Movement Macbeth, there was the first performance last night, tonight and tomorrow night, Friday and Saturday, 22nd, 23rd, if you don't remember the dates of today and tomorrow, 8 p.m. start time.
Uh-huh.
Doors open, I guess, at 7:30.
Box office opens at 7:30.
Okay.
Doors open at 7.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. If you already have tickets, you're all set.
Yep, and you can purchase tickets at the door. Seating is on stage, so you will be very close to the performers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's designed as an intimate, immersive experience.
You'll be able to pick up every facial expression and body gesture without like squinting your eyes or having those theatrical binoculars. Don't have to bring them this time, folks, if you're into that. Well, I can't see the stage too well from sitting way back. No, don't worry about that. This is going to be just a great presentation and one of the greatest plays, and maybe you'll get some new meaning out of it, new significance out of this. The actors are all students here?
All students here from the theater department, yes,
right,
sir.
And many have, of course, it's not just their first class. They've
Oh, yes.
Many of them have taken several other classes.
Mm-hmm.
You teach, as is appropriate, it's about once a year or so, an actual class in movement or pantomime, right?
Yes, it's called Movement for the Actor, and we teach a variety of both the abstract, the concrete, object work, and characterization, as well as emotional expression.
Well, this is just so special, including allowing students to direct one-act plays after they study what they're about and so on. Our theater department, sort of like telecom and art and music, we have experiences and, you might say, applied educational situations, like theater productions, that go way beyond what they could get at other four-year schools even often until they're like a junior, senior, or maybe in grad study. This is a tremendous experience for people, and I can't applaud you and the theater department enough for continuing that the challenging experiences. And even if they're not going to be in theater, it's introductions to the types of skills and knowledge and even teamwork that you just can't get from other kinds of programs or experiences. So,
as well as those introductions to great literature that
teach
such great lessons and give such wonderful exposure, so that people understand more about the society, the culture, and other situations than the ones that we may be particularly living in.
Sort of the beginning, whether you're a theater director or an actor or a set designer, you have to understand the singular intent, and sometimes there's discussions about what that is, but you have to decide and interpret the intent of the author and the words you have in front of you, and sometimes you adapt it to a contemporary situation or you know, modify it depending on, let's say, a version of what you interpret the author was about. But what's coming up also, since you're deeply involved with theater productions here at the college, and, of course, the young person's theater experience has been mm-hmm. under your charge for many, many years. Give us a little insight what's happening either later this summer and into the fall for people that might want to get involved in the future.
Oh, great. Well, in the summer, we're doing a Christopher Durang Festival. Christopher Durang is a comic writer, and we're doing four of his short works. That'll be at the end of August. Mm-hmm. And then in the fall, we're doing our Theater for Young Audiences production. This year, it will be The Bridge to Terabithia, which is based on the novel, and there was also a film version.
Uh-oh.
It's for upper elementary and the junior high age students.
Is it sort of? It sounds like fantasy, but it's sort of like a magic in there, or
no? It's actually about two children who befriend each other, who create their own fantasy world, and then kind of reality breaks in, and they have to be able to negotiate the difference between fantasy and reality.
I think I had that experience over the last couple of weeks. Yeah. sorry. That sounds like so much fun. It's always so well done here, folks. We have some of the best people in production design, costuming, music, sound effect work, and they all come together here at Henry Ford Community College theater programs. So we wish you good luck on that. Are you actually going to do a cameo? Are you part of this movement experience, Jerry?
Yes, I have a few small roles in the piece as well.
Just like Alfred Hitchcock, can't keep yourself away from getting out there. Okay. And so you'll see just a tremendous ensemble production for Movement Macbeth. And the tickets are, I believe, $7.
That's correct.
I don't have it in front of me here. $7 for everyone. Young people, mm-hmm. less?
Nope, okay. Just $7 is the straight cost for every
now,
seat.
If you really wanted information or reservations, you could call on, I got the number right in front of me, Jerry, but I know you know it, 313-845-9817, 9817. But if they get there at 7 or 7:30, I'm sure there still might be some tickets to be had.
Definitely.
Yeah, and it's just a really special experience. Even if you came last week and heard how great those plays were, please consider coming to the Henry Ford Community College Spring One-Act Festival this week. Movement Macbeth, tonight, tomorrow night, 8 p.m. If I didn't mention, Sunday is 2 p.m. only.
That's correct.
So all kinds, and free parking, like some places
yes.
in Dearborn. So.
Between H and I are the two parking lots. Either H or I will get you closest to the Mackenzie Fine Arts Building.
You know, since I retired, I haven't been keeping up. They actually have letters now because we have so many parking lots.
Yes.
They have actually letters up on the
yes.
on the posts.
It's a little hard to find if you're not sure where you're going if you haven't been to the That's building. So H and I are the two.
I was thinking the west
lots.
Side of the campus. Just drive around the perimeter drive from Evergreen Road, and it's sort of on the back side. But there's signs for Fine Arts Center.
Yeah, you can come in either driveway.
Yeah,
either driveway will get
Circle
you there.
Around, yeah.
Yeah, but just follow those letters on the parking lot on signs, and H and I are the two lots to park
right.
in.
Well, congratulations and break a leg. Do you see that to the director? No, just to the actors. Anyway, don't really break the leg. You know, I mean, it's a historically positive thing to say, I guess.
The leg is the curtain over in the side, and so when you exit, you're not supposed to touch it. So it's
gosh.
An ironic comment, right? Break a leg
I
means
see.
Don't touch the curtain and make it wiggle when
that.
You exit.
Boy, we got to have you on more and find out more of these details.
Lots of theater trivia.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Thanks so much, Jerry, and we'll be back with more journal. Hope you get to Movement Shakespeare this weekend, tonight, tomorrow night, 8 p.m., Sunday, 2 p.m., Henry Ford Community College main campus, Adrey Auditorium. And here's a comment from Jim Hightower, and I know Kevin's going to appreciate this, my news director. What are the 10 worst jobs?
There are people in our world. Those willing to believe there are only two kinds of people, and those who think it's a bit more complex than that. Speaking of questionable enumerations, the list of the 10 worst jobs of 2012 is out, and I seem to have two of them. Both newspaper reporter and broadcaster made the list. Okay, I'm not technically a reporter, I'm a columnist, but let's not be picky. These used to be considered quasi-glamorous gigs, but CareerCast, the online compiler of the list, says that the decline in job opportunities and pay in the media world, plus the rise in on-the-job stress, have pushed these down to the 5th and 10th worst career choices out there. It's true that the pay is lower middle class, but there's no heavy lifting, and hey, us commentator types essentially get paid just for running our mouths. Pretty good work if you can get it. Top of the worst list is lumberjack. I can see that. Yes, being outdoors is a plus if the weather's good. But screaming chainsaws and huge trees crashing down would put you on edge every day and maybe in your grave. Dairy farmers rank number 2. It's a noble profession in my view, but most people don't realize that these hard-working and skilled yeomen literally are married to their cows. The lady bovines have to be milked twice a day, including weekends and holidays, no matter the weather or whether you're sick or tired. Other bottom tenners are oil rig workers. Can you say BP? Dishwashers. They get no respect and sorry pay. Butchers. Missing fingers are a routine job hazard there. And waiting tables. Lousy pay and constant abuse from managers and customers alike. This is Jim Hightower saying, however, millions of Americans today can tell you that by far the worst job is looking for one.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
What's the number one source of news for most Americans? The Internet, you say? Niet. The New York Times or Wall Street Journal? Uh-uh. Some fear that it's Fox TV, the shameless spewer of right-wing hokum. But no, not even close. The reality is even scarier than Fox. Get ready to shudder, for America's top news source is your local television station. Yes, the daily purveyors of car wrecks and features on the season's biggest zucchini are the media outlets keeping the masses informed on the issues of the day. Should we laugh, fall down sobbing, or just go bowling? In fairness, some local stations do a crackerjack job, but few even meet a functioning democracy's minimum daily requirement for news to use, chiefly because they're nearly all owned by corporate chains that constantly cut reporters and shy away from aggressive reporting, especially any reporting on major advertisers. Now, though, another corporate contagion is spreading throughout TV land, further shriveling the ability or even the desire of local stations to fulfill their news reporting duty to the public. Call it cookie-cutter news. Rather than competing to dig up the best stories, two or more stations in a city have been quietly signing shared services agreements, meaning they share one news director, video reports, local interviews, graphics, office space, and even the scripts read by their news anchors. Except for different network logos on the screen, the broadcasts are basically the same, often word for word. This is Jim Hightower saying at least 83 TV markets from Vermont to Hawaii now have stations engaged in this anti-competitive collusion, abrogating their responsibility to use our airwaves for the public good. For action, go to freepress.net.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
You're listening to the new WHFR Journal here from Henry Ford Community College. Jay Koronek and Kevin Brough here in the studio. Welcome today, Kevin.
Hey, it's good to be here. It's a little tough getting here this morning. Kind of like you said, I didn't deal with the garage sailors, but I dealt with the traffic up along Telegraph.
Yeah, I guess people are maybe trying to get out for another summer weekend up north or something. I don't know. It does seem to be extremely busy out there. And good weather. Got a little cooler the last couple of days, so that's all good. Just some thoughts about Jim Hightower's two commentaries there. The 10 worst jobs. Never heard about it, but you know, one of them is being a news commentator. And so that's what we are, Kevin. Sorry about that.
Wish I would have heard that before I went to college.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Kevin is not getting the big bucks for what he's doing, and I'm just part-time here, so not getting any benefits directly from this part-time work. And so I guess we're out there with the majority, who are at least employed a little bit anyway, but not something we could survive on by itself, unfortunately. Oh, well.
It's a lot of fun, though.
Yes, it is. And I'm sure Rush Limbaugh feels that way, too. It's a lot of fun for him. Of course, he's getting the very big bucks.
Oh, yeah.
Even if he lost a few sponsors for some of his overstatements, or...
Over-the-top comments.
Yeah, more than over-the-top, I guess. Some people found them downright insulting, and appropriately so, I feel. But let's not get into that too much. Remember, all the opinions on this hour of the new WHFR Journal are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford Community College or even Board of Trustees members, who I'm going to be mentioning in a few moments. So I hope they don't get out of shape about that. But the second point is a really good comment that I've made before. The news perspectives are actually shrinking, that there's news still on a lot of radio and TV stations, but it's the same news on almost all the stations in that market because they're owned by the same companies, they share the same news desk, and they read the same press releases rather than doing investigative reporting. So it's not just a smaller crew of people who are doing the news for multiple stations, not just one station, but also they don't have the time to come up with their own points of view and do research. And so it turns out that you just wind up basically maybe editing or paraphrasing the press release. And so you don't know if it's true or not. You don't know who else said anything else. You don't know what the – you just go with it, so to speak. And that's really dangerous. You can trust, folks, that here on the new WHFR Journal, we may be reading from the papers, but we start saying the craziest things. No, we start saying other points of view that we know of. That's the whole line. We have special guests on. Like now we found out about breaking your leg.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
It talks about the curtain. Don't hit the curtain, the edge of the curtain on your way off stage. It has nothing to do with physically breaking your leg. And you know, it's amazing because there's that TV commercial for the calcium supplement that an older woman does, famous actress does. And the whole joke is break your legs. Well, I don't want to, so I take this calcium fortified supplement for my weak bones, my weak old bones. And she's a professional actress. She's done Broadway for years and years. Doesn't she know that it doesn't actually refer to, you know, the human body?
Well, maybe there's a hidden message in there. Maybe if you touch that curtain, you get your legs broken.
Yeah.
No, just kidding.
Yeah, it's a consequence, immediate consequence. The director will, or the stage manager will hit you in the shins or something. I think she just never had a class with Jerry Jablinski or a theater class here at Henry Ford Community College. Oh, it was Blythe Danner.
I guess an intelligent
Blythe Danner,
guy.
Very, very fine actress, but they make a commercial joke of it that, you know, if you get older, you have to take a calcium supplement. And by the way, folks, don't trust what any commercial. That was a commercial. Okay, that's not an endorsement from a real person. Well, she is real, but she's reading a script. She's getting paid to say that. The studies that I've read in the last couple months clearly show that calcium supplements for older people, even that drug that she's talking about, which is prescription only, they don't help your bones.
I've heard
they
a lot.
They actually don't help the bone mass. And you say, well, then how can it be a drug that's legal? Because, you know, if they can prove it just helps like one person out of 10 billion, I'm exaggerating here, then they can get it on the market and say it works better than a sugar pill. But they don't need much of an improvement to be able to license it and get it out there. It doesn't mean it's going to help everybody at all or even a majority of people to take it. And you know, even some doctors don't know that. And that's true with so many drugs. So careful of what you hear on the radio. It may not be the full story. Or TV, it may not be the full story. And you say, well, I know what opinion is and what a news story is. Often there's not much difference, folks, because the news story might just be a rewriting of a press release from the people that want to make money.
Yeah, usually okay? They come from two sources, right? Just the AP and Reuters. So,
right.
And, two and, people. Yeah.
Well, right. There's that problem.
And
but,
then it's recycled over and over.
Probably the two or three best news sources that actually check their facts is Associated Press and Reuters, which is international, as is AP, and also the BBC organization, which is more concerned with radio news, but also TV news, BBC America. They have people that actually check facts, and they don't normally put things so-called on the wire or send things out to other stations without getting at least a couple points of view. The problem is local news people at local papers, even in Detroit or Chicago, they don't have time enough or an extra staff to do extra research on local stories. So they take the press release from even, let's say, the police chief. Let's say there's a disturbance. And so what really happened? They just read the police report. They don't have time to call anybody who might have been a leader of a group or at that event to see if that's really the way it happened. I'm not saying the police would lie. Oh, no. But everybody has their own perspective, maybe because they stand in a different place or they have different backgrounds or cultural assumptions. And so there's different interpretations. And I think a good reporter should always check, should never go with the press release, certainly not from a drug company that's trying to make to sell a lot of drugs. I mean, if they have that self-interest in mind, they're not going to tell you the full story. I'm sorry about that, folks. They're not going to do it. And then the reporters go with like, oh, here's a cure for osteoporosis, which is the bone you know, weakening disease of many older folks. And don't get me into giving you a diagnosis, folks, over the air, because that would sue me for that. Yeah. No, I don't know what I'm not a doctor. I don't know what, but there are things that you can read about. You can ask your doctor if you have to, that are alternatives to those calcium supplements that I just put down. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I got to say, I take a calcium supplement, and I'm extremely old, but it doesn't. Maybe I take it for other health reasons. I'm not certain from what I've read recently that it's really helping my bones to be stronger. I know one thing in general, and maybe every doctor would say, is that getting regular exercise, that is walking or bicycling or swimming, which is a good exercise for older people. I can't do swimming because I keep inhaling water rather than air. I just can't seem to be coordinated enough to open my mouth when my head's above water. I keep opening it when it's underwater. So that's scary. So, you know, swimming, therefore, is not a good choice for me. It's sort of an activity in drowning, you know, controlled drowning. But I bike, I walk, and believe it or not, folks, you say, well, all that pounding or, you know, moving your body, that's going to hurt your bones. No, it actually strengthens them. Somehow your body knows that your bones need to be fortified, and it'll get the right nutrients there if you actually do. And you don't have to go crazy. You don't have to jog for 10 miles a day or, you know, just about, they often say 10 minutes of brisk walking in the morning and maybe again in the evening. That's enough. And it really helps with your bones. And just calcium supplements have not been proven at this point to directly help strengthen bones. And that prescription drug has been shown not to help very many people either. So
yeah, I've read in some medical journals where you'd get more benefit by cutting out the soda pop. Mm-hmm. Sorry, that's the southern way to say it. The pop, the northern
that's
way
all right.
to say it.
Yeah. And so the bottom line here is not about the drugs, folks. It's about shrinking the news and our democracy. Our democracy depends on many different points of view expressed as completely as possible, that we think about with our brains, that we talk about with others rationally, and then we try to make the best decision possible. That's the only way we can have a good democracy, whether it's in our neighborhoods or in our city councils or in government. So never take, and I've said this before on the show, never take anyone's opinion from the radio or TV as the only opinion, and never then act on the basis of only that. Please. Please do not. And so anything that I provoke you with here on this show, or that Kevin provokes you with, check it out. Go to some websites. Do some research. Talk to other people, other professionals, and then make the best decision you can. You know, they always say, don't jump to contusions, which means you can actually be physically hurt if you don't think through issues before you take action. You know, obviously don't jump to conclusions, but don't jump to contusions, really. If you don't know the whole story, there could actually be serious negative consequences. Okay, I'm going to jump on the breaking news. Are you ready for this, Kevin? Hang on to your seat here.
I'm holding on.
Okay, as you know, we read and look at, for part of this, besides talking to people in the community out and about, I actually had someone call me yesterday on the phone, a professional, and they asked me, the background on Dearborn City Hall and the future of the Dearborn Board of Education headquarters, the Tenike building, which is in disrepair, and they've got no money to fix it, and the floors are cracking, and the ceiling is leaking. So what's going to happen to that? You know, the city of Dearborn, Kevin's shaking his head. Yes, he heard about this. But the city of Dearborn, probably should speak up, Kevin, when you want to say. But the city of Dearborn, you know, they bought a new building. They gave a tour of the new building way back in February, the ADP building on Michigan Avenue west of the Centennial Library. That's going to be the new City Hall, folks. It's a done deal. That's going to be the new City Hall, and they might move in as early as sometime next spring, 2013. But they offered, because apparently they had a little extra space there, the Dearborn administration, the administration of the Dearborn Education K-12 system, to move into the building with them. They got the space. So, and Tenike is, you know, not going to be habitable for very much longer, and they've got no money to build a new building or fix Tenike, because it really had to be raised. Apparently, it's just structural things that are just falling apart. As I said, the girders and the ceiling and the floors, they can't really fix it. You know, one of those modern buildings back in the 1950s, never designed to last more than about 20 years. And so, but it was interesting. They're asking me, you know.
You're pretty knowledgeable.
I only know what I read in the papers, but I do get a chance to talk to some of the people on the school board and the you know, the Board of Ed and City Hall and that. And so, yeah, I guess by listening to the show, you could actually, I don't think they listen to the show regularly, so it's not their fault.
That's a shame.
They just call me directly, you know. Yeah. Just tell
Such
me the
a
story.
Good show.
Just sum it up. But don't just listen to me, because who knows what's happening there for sure. But we read the Dearborn Press and Guide twice a week, and the Dearborn Times Herald edition once a week, and we try to give you headlines from that and give you background to it on this show, the new WHFR Journal, and Making Waves, of course. And this comes from patch.com, dearborn.patch.com. And you should sign up and get emails if you're a resident of Dearborn. Yes, it's free. Sure, there's ads on the site. But don't use it as your only source, just like you wouldn't listen to the show as your only source of news. You need to support with money the Dearborn Press and Guide and the Times Herald, because they actually pay reporters, well, one or two, and most of them part-time now, to get the facts and straighten out the stories, and they have editors who tried to, you know, choose the best stories and position them appropriately and get the right photos in there. And it's not the they're not the organizations they used to be 20 years ago, but they don't have that kind of staff anymore. But if you want more differences, a difference of opinion and different perspectives that make you allow you to make better decisions on, I don't know, who to vote for, like in the primary coming up August 7th or in November locally, let's just say locally too, you got to have multiple points of view before you can make a good decision.
Yeah, it's dangerous to just go off one point.
Subscribe to one of the papers. You say, well, each paper is, what is it? Oh my gosh, 75 cents. That's cheaper than the News or Free Press, I think, isn't
it? Cheaper than a cup of coffee.
Yeah, but 75 cents, you say, well, over a year, that's 52 weeks, and so that's like 40-some. I think it's only like $20 or $25 bucks
for a
year.
Yeah, they give you a discount.
And they deliver to your door. The Times Herald sends it through the mail. The Press and Guide actually has a person who actually makes a delivery. Don't forget to chip in when you subscribe a couple bucks. You can actually pay the tip.
Oh, yeah.
To the delivery person.
Yeah, I used to deliver the Detroit News, and that was a large portion of my income, right, was tips.
Yeah, the Times Herald, I think they want your... I think you can do it through the website. You have to subscribe by responding in the mail. But write your check for a couple bucks more and put it down as the tip. Well, pay them for their postage in terms of Time Herald. But Press and Guide, you can do that online. That's pressandguide.com. And both of them, I highly recommend both of them. And then patch.com. Okay, so what's the breaking news here? Please get to the breaking news, Koronik. Okay. The question is, one of the stories from Jessica Carreras. Oh, I'm sorry, Molly Tippin wrote this, another great writer for the DearbornPatch.com. Should Dearborn Schools and HFCC, you've heard about them, that's us, Henry Ford Community College, explore education board split? It says, with two millage renewals in 2015, although down below it says 2014, oh well, and a myriad of overlapping issues, at least one Board of Education trustee is wondering whether a single board can serve two masters. So here's the story. Most school boards only meet twice a month. But if members of the 7-member Dearborn Public Schools Board of Education can't be found at the district's Audette Street headquarters, that's Tenike building, on Monday nights, they surely can be found at Henry Ford Community College. That's because the board, which steers policy for the 18,700 student district, Henry Ford Community College, performs the same service for HFCC as the last joint K-14 board in the state of Michigan. Once commonplace in the state, most community colleges long ago opted out of the shared school college system in favor of their own dedicated boards, so that they don't have to be confused about maybe hiring policies. Or because I remember when I got started here on this campus. Campus is relatively new, the main campus here, because I started on the faculty at HFCC in the 60s. The single school board couldn't figure out why we needed faculty parking lots and faculty bathrooms separate from the students. Well, actually, I still can't. But, I mean, the teacher gets quick access to bathrooms and or parking so that they can get to class first and mark the students absent.
You know, that, mark them down for being tardy.
Yeah, they're late. But the teachers can get there first because they got separate parking lots. And if they got to go to the restroom, they got separate restrooms. They fly in and out. And, yeah. I didn't quite understand that. But, the one that did get to me and is totally valid in terms of difference is that college teachers need their own offices. Okay? Cool. High school teachers don't have that. They have their classroom, and they got their lunch and their desk or something. They don't have a separate office. They might have one meeting room for teachers or something, a lounge room. But they don't have a separate office. And maybe they don't need one. But in college, you know, after class, you need some privacy. Where does the student and the teacher meet? And, of course, all teachers here have office hours, and it's required, and it's very important. If somebody, one of our students, needs to come and talk to us, it's posted on the door. They know our hours from the syllabus. They can just stop on in and ask their question. Now, a lot of people email or even they text or voicemail or whatever these days, but it's good to have that availability, I think, and to answer personal questions privately by being able to close the door on the office. Sometimes that's very important that students will tell you things about their personal lives that affect their education. And so teachers can provide valuable services and actually get a lot of work done, too. If they're organized, they have a desk separate from their classroom desk. Besides, we're using all different rooms. Teachers don't just have one room for their classes.
As soon as their class ends, somebody else's class starts in that room.
Because they're not all the same. Different classrooms are specialized. Like there's a film history classroom, so we can show movies, you know, in a high quality, big time screen. And other classrooms have other lab facilities that are necessary. And so the rooms are all, and teachers teach a wide variety of classes. Very few teachers teach only one class for their full schedule, like five sections of the same class. That almost never happens. We all have a few advanced classes and some lab classes, and so we got to go to different rooms. Well, that's been the college model since, 150 years ago. But the school board in 1960 said, why do teachers need classrooms? And they didn't want to approve of the buildings of this campus. Offices. If they had separate offices for the... if we do that, because we're the same board, then all of the K-12 teachers are going to ask for separate offices. You know, the standard of education in the district, since the district was K-14, as it is now. And, it became obvious that they have to think of different special situations for K-12 and for Henry Ford Community College. And so there is, we're the last K-14 board in Michigan.
Yeah. How do they come up with the K-14? Is that through 12th grade?
12th grade is the senior
year,
and we're 2 years more, yeah. So, yeah. In fact, I heard in the 60s, the joke was, this is Henry Ford Community College's high school with ashtrays. There's no more ashtrays because you can't smoke anywhere on campus or even outside the buildings anymore. So that's not the designation, folks. But and I don't remember they ever allowed smoking in classrooms during class. Oh, I guess they did. When I was in college in the 60s, we had college professors who were smoking their pipes
while
in front of the
class.
While they're teaching. So
Times have changed.
Although I don't ever remember any, in my college days, in graduate study, U of M and Oakland University in Rochester, and I don't think we were allowed to smoke in class, but the teachers could.
I remember in high school, when I started high school, they had a smoking section for the students, high school students.
Okay.
And I'm not that old, so.
Okay. Well, that was one of those transition things, too. I'm sure there's no smoking now.
No.
Okay. So where did this come up from? What are the responses of the community? First of all, Henry Ford Community College, I am so old, I remember this, twice, once in the 60s and once in the 70s, we wanted to separate and become our own district with our own board of trustees. Okay, not the same ones. And they were both voted down by the taxpayers of Dearborn. There was some thought that the state of Michigan might move in and combine us with Wayne County Community College. That was bogus, but there was a fear that Dearborn would lose control over their community college. Anyway, didn't happen, and because it was just ungrounded fears about that. I think if they have two separate boards, they need two separate districts, and it would definitely have to become a vote by the public, I think, to do that. However, this is interesting. Get this. Incompatible public offices are frequently investigated by the Michigan Attorney General's office and are defined as an individual holding elected public office for two boards or commissions that are inherently incompatible, such as county water commissioner who votes to raise rates and then serves on a city council that must pay the increased rate fees. And in fact, Brad Banasik, who's the legal counsel for the Michigan Association of School Boards, said there is no legal conflict, though, that would suggest the board should represent only the schools of the college. Quote from Brad, "There isn't any conflict because there's no authority that tells me so." He says, he goes on to say, "An incompatible office situation is when you can't serve on two boards, and there's nothing in the Attorney General's opinions that indicate a local school board and a college board or university board are conflictive. The question is," he says, "are they going to be able to represent both interests equally? Are the decisions there most likely to be made to be at odds? There's nothing in the law that says it can't hold both offices." Adriana Phelan, vice president of the Michigan Community College Association, agreed with Banasik. By the way, folks, where did Molly Tippin get these people? They just call her up? She called them to get their points of view. Now, they could have been quoted. I don't think they were at the school board meeting. They could have been quoted by the one board member that brought this issue up. But she actually went to get quotes, which means she did investigative reporting. Good for Molly. Yeah, you know, yeah. I mean, Patch.com often does that. Many points of view, the articles are pretty well researched. I haven't found a major error, and they always make an effort to get other points of view here. Also, Dave Mustadin, of course, he's the spokesperson, the PR guy for Dearborn Public Schools, former student of mine. How you doing, Dave? Says he can't remember a time when the board was forced to make a decision that was in favor of one entity at the expense of the other, like in favor of K-12 but against HFCC. Well, Dave, for a while, I remember they used to raid our budget.
Rate or raid?
Raid. In other words, they needed more money for K-12, and they took money away from HFCC. You got plenty of students, and we're, you know, being hurt here. The state of Michigan gave us less money. We're going to take some of your money. Well, I think we stopped that. Now, they could still, I guess, do it if they wanted to, but they actually put some rules, functioning rules, in place for themselves, which I guess they could undo. It's like, no, we don't, the budgets are separate, okay? Doesn't mean they couldn't. If they're hurting in K-12, they say, well, everybody's going to have to take 10% off their budget and their salary, 10% cut in K-12. Well, it's not fair to take 10% away from Henry Ford Community College. We're busting at the seams with students. We need all the teachers we can get, all the facilities. And, they are too, of course. But I'm just saying their situation is different from ours, and you shouldn't be raiding the budget of the other entity, even though technically maybe you could. But over the years, they put in place a couple of guidelines and principles that the budgets would be created and they would be stable and they wouldn't take from one to pay the other. Nonetheless, they could, I guess, if they had to. So I'm still concerned about that. That should not be done. But functioning, I think for the last 15 years or so, they haven't touched our budget if they need it in K-12 or vice versa. They haven't taken from K-12 to help us. But of course, K-12 is like all K-12 systems are in desperate need of help and support. And it's not the salaries, folks. It's because the state of Michigan won't give us the money. Okay? Just that simple. Okay? Your schools, your education is not as good as it could be. Okay? At the K-12 level. And I just heard a discouraging study. Almost everybody agrees that students are not learning as much now than before. K-12. We're talking about, okay? Across the whole U.S., every level of K-12, you know, elementary and high school, middle school, all that. Guess what, though? Surveys show parents think, pretty much half of them think, oh, our schools are doing a great job. They're great. They're really educating our kids well. No, they're not. What? Have you gone to their classes? Have you talked to the schools? My daughter, who, of course, I always use my daughter as an example, but she's an insider. She's a teacher in Southfield Public Schools. She says she, you know, they have the parent-teacher nights and that. She hardly ever sees a parent. She sits there for 3-4 hours. Nobody comes by to talk about their kid. Oh, they're busy. Oh, they all need a job if they've got one, sure. But come on, don't you want to find out how your child is doing and get suggestions on how you can be a partner with the teacher? No. Well, if you don't care, you better pay the teacher a little more money, right? Because they got to do the parenting job, I guess. Their parents don't, in fact, now in Southfield Public Schools, it's so bad, they're recommending to all teachers at all levels, don't give any homework. Huh. Don't give homework.
I wish I would have done that when I was... No, that's bad.
Yeah, I mean, come on. There's a lot to learn, and some of it should be done independently outside of class, because can you really concentrate in class in your own head with all those other people around? And you're not going to learn as much if you're not studying as much, just simple number of hours, okay? And the parents aren't helping, and the parents aren't encouraging it. They're not supporting it. My daughter says, and she still gives homework, it never gets done. Never gets done, okay? Two or three kids do it, and the rest don't even do it. So what can she do? Fail them all and have them all repeat? No, she can't do that, although she fails an awful lot. She's at the seventh grade level. And then they have little summer programs to get some of them up to speed. But if the parents aren't going to be involved and they think the schools are doing a great job because the kids are out of the house or something, I don't know, you're not. You're wrong, folks. You're definitely wrong. There's less education happening now for your kids than even for you. And maybe you didn't like school, but maybe you probably learned a lot more than your kids are learning right now. Is that the fault of the schools? Yes. Is it the fault of you? Yes, because you're not helping them with the homework and supporting it. But also, you're not paying those taxes. Okay, you're just not paying your taxes enough, you know, and your legislature that keeps cutting the budgets of the schools, okay, that's totally wrong. It's my opinion. It's my opinion. I'm an insider. I've taught for years. I know how the money's gone down and down. I know how the programs have been curtailed and cut out and eliminated, and it's a great tragedy here. Okay, who is that school board person? Jim Schoolmaster. Okay. With a name like that, he should know about schools.
Schoolmaster, yeah. You would think.
Yeah, and he's a good guy, although, you know, the one of the responses, and it's from a guy who's been on the show, Michael Albano, who is a big, always he writes columns in the Press and Guide every now and then about big supporter of Dearborn and rah-rah, we're doing a great job. But he points out, he says, sure, let the taxpayers fund another school board and superintendent. He's being ironic. Which will cost Dearborn residents approximately $10,000 a year for each school board member times 7. Then another superintendent, which will cost about $150,000 a year. I'm not sure. I would think the president of the college would be the head of the board. Maybe not. Maybe you need to hire a board superintendent on top of it. Maybe he's right about that. Let's become another Dearborn Heights, which has, I mean, I think you just elect a board and then one of them becomes the administrator and the president still is the administrator for the whole college. I think we're off by 150,000 there. We got to check on that. I don't think most school districts hire another administrator on top of the elected board. But it's true, yeah, $10,000, $70,000 a year. They're just part-timers, but $70,000, no benefits. And he says, let's become another Dearborn Heights, he's saying ironically, which has three school districts with three school boards. You know, they have Crestwood is one, and there's D7, and there's something. What's the other one? Kevin doesn't know. Crestwood. Okay.
The only one I know of is Crestwood.
Yeah, no, there's two others. And I think the other one is called D7.
Is Annapolis another one?
But I didn't know this. Thank you, Mike. They have three different school boards. Why is that? That's a little small compared to Dearborn. Small little city, you know.
They can condense it into
No disrespect, Dearborn Heights, but that is kind of crazy, and I hadn't heard that even come up in discussion before. Why do they have three school boards over there for such a small area? There's some historical background, like, you know, those areas were more or less self independent for a while, but why now is it still needed, you know? Dearborn Heights has been a single city for quite a while, right?
And we only have one, correct?
Yeah. Well, most cities too, yeah. will just have one what? School district. Yeah, why is that? And he said, just keep it the way it is. And DPS's board and superintendent do a fine job representing DPS and HFCC. No, their superintendent has nothing to do with us. Okay? Okay, the superintendent, Brian Winston, he is only K-12. Okay? And Dr. Gail Mee is our administrator, and she's already there. And so it's Dr. Mee and Winston, and she's, I think, the actual head of the HFCC Board of Trustees, although they probably appoint one of the members. I think probably the president, whoever the president of the K-12 board, which is called the Board of Ed, is also the president of Henry Ford Community College Board of Trustees.
Yeah, is that going to change with Dr. Mee's announced her leaving?
Well, she's going to be leaving. We'll get another president.
Yeah, so then there's going to be
another. The position will be the same.
Yeah.
And the responsibilities will be the same.
Just change persons.
Yeah. Yep, okay. Yep. All right. That's usually the way it works. And somebody here, someone else, of course, says HFCC should not be part of the Dearborn Public Schools. They should be on their own and fend for themselves. Ooh, I like that. Yeah, that's fine. I don't have a problem with that.
That's the way it worked.
We have more money. As I said, I'm afraid that just because we're successful at doing what we need to do. I mean, where can people get retrained and get a career more inexpensively than a community college? And in this area, it's Henry Ford Community College. Yeah, with the great programs we have and all the different classes and all the specialties and 110 programs and certificates, we're the head start for the people that can't afford the four-year college.
And we are a lot cheaper than the other community college if you compare them.
I think we're less expensive than Wayne County Community College.
Not by a lot, but
certainly, if you're a resident of Dearborn, you get that extra discount and tuition. And so a Dearborn resident, young person out of Dearborn High School or older person, if you're a Dearborn resident, you get about a 40-50% discount on the tuition here because of that. So yeah, we're a lot less expensive.
And the professors are really good too. A lot of my professors, they come from teaching from places like Michigan State and Michigan. They're teaching 500 students at a time in a big, huge stage. They got big, assistants. And they move over here for the intimacy, the personalization experience with the students, with the smaller class sizes. So we have really good instructors and professors.
And that contact is oh so important, sometimes in some classes than others. But, I've gone through college, and it was always the small classes where I learned the most because I could ask the most questions. And also, I could be corrected if I had the wrong ideas. You know, I mean, I'd bring them up, and I'd hear my ideas, and they might be shot down. But you grow, you develop by that kind of contact with not just teaching assistants, but people that have their full doctorate right there as a freshman or a sophomore. Often four-year schools, no disrespect here, but they have to use a graduate student who's often very bright, but overloaded with work and working on their own doctorate or something at the same time, and maybe not a lot of years of teaching experience. And so it's not always as good as what you can get as an experience here at Henry Ford Community College. So that's the opinion there. Apparently, they're a little scared. We'll finish up the story. It's amazing how long we stayed on the story.
I can't believe it's almost time to go.
Jeez. Okay. 4 minutes, and Highway 61 is going to get started with Joanne Kay, who's already in the studio here. And that's going to be a great show from 2 to 6 p.m. today, Highway 61, the best in the blues. One person criticized Jim Schoolmaster, and I think inappropriately here. I wish they would keep away from personal attacks like that, which is just it's just an opinion. And my opinion of Jim Schoolmaster is extremely high. And but the final point about the issues here about splitting the boards is that apparently millages are going to come up for renewal for the K-12 system and for HFCC in 2014 or 2015, if we believe the subtitle of the story. And if we split, there's going to be four proposals. And I don't know how that works, but maybe is there two for a K-12 that have to be voted on? And then if they split, there'll have to be two more. And I don't know what the difference is, why there's two for each of these entities. But they think that might confuse the voters. Some people, it's true, they see a lot of requests for more money. They'll get in their ugly side and just vote them all down without thinking about it. And, you shouldn't do that with schools, folks. Shame on you. Cut money for schools, shame on you.
Yeah, there's already enough cuts going on for schools.
Last thing it should be cut. Because believe me, education has suffered for years and years and years, and it's getting worse and worse. And it's not the teachers. Don't you blame my daughter. Come on. She's working so hard and so frustrated with no resources, and her pay was cut 10%, and her benefits and her health care were cut. And don't tell me, oh, it's got to balance what the private sector is getting. Well, let me say this for the private sector. You're not being paid enough either. You're not getting enough benefits. Okay? That's my personal opinion. But don't tell me that our public servants are getting too much money.
Oh, no, far from it.
Okay? I mean, you know, compared to so-called professionals in business and industry, our professionals who are either delivering our mail or teaching our kids or handling government offices in Lansing, they're not getting the pay that they deserve, my humble opinion, or the benefits that they deserve. There's no reason they should be cut. They're not incompetent, and they're controlling our destinies. And you cut them, you may think that's smart, but I think the other way around is the rich companies need to pay all of their workers more. They need to provide health care for all their workers, okay? And they need to pay them more than minimum wage, that's for sure, in order to have a better society. Because isn't that the actual, it's better than trickle down? It means that everybody will have the money to buy stuff.
Yeah.
Won't that immediately cause a major, why wait if there is trickle down and the first George Bush, our first George Bush president, said there is no such thing as trickle down. That's voodoo economics. It doesn't work.
Actually trickle up.
Yeah. Well, if everybody gets more money, and especially the majority of people from their pay and better benefits, they'll be healthier, happier, they'll spend more money, the economy will so quickly bounce back. So don't tell me, oh, those teachers are getting too much money. No.
No, there's a huge problem with that. You know there's a problem when the person that changes the trash makes more money than the teachers.
Yeah, well, I don't want my trash spilled all over as they're carrying it off. But yeah, you're right. It's not just, and that's a tough job, though, trash collecting. I mean,
well, it's all a tough job. But
they got to actually jump down from that truck and lift the heavy overloaded barrels very often, and in the hot sun and the rain. And I don't know what they're being paid, but I hope it's more than minimum wage because that's just wrong to
have
people.
Yeah, that's a hard job, and I agree. They do deserve that more.
So,
but more than a doctorate that's been going to school for 12 years to get their degree,
but the future is our kids, you know, and if they don't know much,
we're all in trouble.
We're all sunk even more than we are now. So, okay, that's our happy thoughts, and it's 2 minutes after we got to get started with Highway 61. Thank you for listening to the new WHFR Journal, and more next week, and hope you tune in to try to get those important perspectives.